Well, I want to introduce my Wi-Fi wife. The way she got that is we've only been married about 7 months now since Thanksgiving, and she kept her previous name, Weiberg, because people had known her that way for 40-some years. So she decided to hyphenate, Weiberg Fisher. The Sunday school teacher said, "That's too long. Let's call her Wi-Fi instead." So I don't like four-letter words like Wi-Fi. So I said, let's add another letter, and we'll call her Wifey as one of my additional pet names for her. Now, as far as personal background is concerned, some of you know me as the previous editor of the ASA newsletter, co-editor with Margaret Towne for 9 years. But my primary activity has been with a group known as Trans World Radio that we served so far 49 years with them and are still continuing. First at Monte Carlo, then Swaziland, and then Guam. And more recently writing a program called Truth in the Test Tube that's been aired primarily to Marxist countries like Russia, China, Albania, Vietnam, Cuba, and so on. And also I'm a co-author of a book called Scientists Who Believe, with a chapter called I'm a Missing Link. Now, pulling weeds before planting seeds, what do we mean by that? Well, Jesus said the perfectly good gospel seed doesn't grow well in thorny ground. And so the enemy plants a number of thorns. You remember yesterday, Dean Nelson mentioned that at the customs in Britain, someone asked him, "God and physics, huh? Which side are you on?" As if there has to be a war between the two. So the DNA of pulling weeds, we could say, is dislodging negative attitudes. What are the thorns? Well, a one noted theologian said, "We may preach with all the fervor of a reformer and yet succeed only in winning a straggler here and there if we permit the whole collective thought of a nation to be controlled by ideas which prevent Christianity from being regarded as anything more than a harmless delusion." This was spoken long before the God Delusion book was published, but it is still a very relevant statement from J. Gresham Machen. What collective thought exalts itself against the knowledge of God? Well, the first thorn is scientific atheism. Science allegedly proves there is no God. There's no question about that. Science has proved it 1,000 times. And the first language in which we use this was Russian. And their statement was quite frequently, "Science has proved no God 1,000 times. We challenge them, name one." And it was interesting, a couple of years later, the broadcasters, the heads of the Russian department, were saying, you know, we haven't heard that statement coming back from our listeners for over a year, that the program was diffusing that thorn pretty well. So scientific atheism saturates many classrooms and most media, not necessarily by that name, but essentially the content. Now, we hear things through our own perceptions. And so what's the atheistic interpretation of John 3:16? When an atheist hears us quoting, "For God," and he's thinking in the back of his mind, "who doesn't exist, so loved the world, that he gave his only begotten son," yeah, conceived by a virgin, that's scientifically impossible. "That whoever believes in him," who doesn't exist, "should not perish, but have some kind of imaginary everlasting life." So a person needs to accept Genesis 1:1 before he's ready for John 3:16. So how do you convince someone it is he who has made us and not we ourselves? Well, one thing that we use is the argument to design that most of us in ASA are familiar with, the fine-tuning argument, what Francis Collins calls the intricacy of the individual organs. I'm not sure how I got that pronunciation, but intricacy or intricacy, the organs really do live up to that description. Alan Sandage is another example that we've quoted on the program. Just passed away, I think, in 2010. He was referred to by a number of people as Super Hubble. He actually replaced Edwin Hubble was his understudy for quite a while and then took over when Hubble retired. New York Times obituary referred to him as the most influential astronomer of his generation. And I happened to meet one of his classmates several years ago, and he said, Alan wasn't that much smarter than the rest of us. He just stuck with the problem 10 times as long. And so he won the Crawford Prize, which is the considered by many the equivalent for astronomy of the Nobel Prize. He grew up originally in a non-Christian religion, but the things that really bugged him were, why is there something instead of nothing? And why is the universe describable in differential equations? Why is there mathematics that can analyze this? Does that mean that a brain who understood calculus put it together? So a conversation with Mark Schellhammer yesterday, we talked about a statement that had been made in the Bible about Jesus healing a person, a blind man. And he first said, I see trees walking. I see men as trees walking. And the second time Jesus touched him, he saw men as men walking. And Dr. Schellhammer points out the fact that the eye does not really take pictures as such and transmit them as a photograph in its entirety to the brain. It generates data, digital information, which different parts of the nervous system process differently. The shapes, another part processes the colors, another processes the motion, and they all work together in real time so that we get the image of what's happening. Another argument from design. Even more persuasive than any one individual organ and its intricacy is the way the organs are organized into an organism, what we call the whole package phenomenon. And NASA observes things pretty close to the beginning, but so far they haven't gotten back to see this, the hand of God originally starting things. But the second thorn, no educated person believes God exists, certainly no scientist. So we blow the whistle on that one with some cognitive dissonance. Discord, of course, something that doesn't harmonize with your preconceptions. Quite often we use something that's supposed to be shocking or surprising. Who would ever dare to say Einstein had made a mistake because he assumed there was no beginning, matter was eternal? And in fact, his first reaction to data that seemed to be confirming the Big Bang was he was repelled by it. So Polkinghorne made the statement, quoted last night, that atheists aren't stupid, but their atheistic worldview just explains less of reality than the theistic view really does. Cognitive dissonance, something that contradicts what I always knew. I knew that all scientists are atheists, but surprise, these Nobel scientists are saying, Leon Letterman's saying, some days I believe in God, others not. There will always be room for God. If we discover all the laws of physics, the question remains, who made the laws? And then Max Born, those who say that the study of science makes a man an atheist must be rather silly people. He didn't elaborate that I could find, but that statement, and then Ernst Boris Chain saying the principle of teleological purpose stares the biologist in the face wherever he looks. The probability for such an event as the origin of DNA molecules to have occurred by sheer chance is just too small to be seriously considered. In fact, even some of the atheists have made statements. I think it was Sir Francis Crick that said we have to constantly keep in mind that what we see that appears to be purpose really isn't. Which seems to tie in with Romans 1 that says they suppress the truth. They see the obvious but try to deny it because of a prior commitment. And then Nobel statements. Werner Heisenberg saying the first gulp from the glass of natural sciences will turn you into an atheist. but at the bottom of the glass, God is waiting for you. William Phillips saying, I can't walk across my church narthex without tripping over a dozen scientists. And Richard Bube, who is not a Nobel laureate, but was former editor of the ASA Journal, said there are proportionally as many atheistic truck drivers as atheistic scientists. It's not the brain that forces you to atheism, but it's the will. Now, let me summarize briefly one of the people we've quoted on the program, Dr. Francis Collins. He was once an atheist. In fact, he said that he was evangelistic in his atheism. He was not a person with whom you would have enjoyed having lunch because he considered it his duty to convince you of his viewpoint and show you how stupid Christians were. Now he's an outspoken Christian. What changed his mind? One of the things was he was a medical intern getting his MD, and he met Christian patients. He met a variety of patients that he had to tell them, I'm sorry, we have the test results back, and it really doesn't look very encouraging. And he discovered that some of the patients went to pieces when they heard this. Our days are limited. We're in despair. But others took it quite calmly, saying, I am ready. I know where I'm going. And he thought at first this was a crutch, a psychological crutch. But it happened over and over again to the point where he wondered, now should I look into this? He started examining atheism, first of all. And he discovered that this was, most of the arguments for atheism were what he called those of a schoolboy. Now, when we put this on the air, you can imagine the reaction when an atheist listens. You're telling me the arguments of an atheist are something a schoolboy has? Now, wait a minute. We have Richard Dawkins and some of these PhDs claiming to make a case. Let me look at it, because I don't accept the fact that I have swallowed something that a schoolboy would consider logical and no one else would. He looked into the atheistic arguments, found they were shallow. And then he started looking at non-Christian religions, found that they didn't make an awful lot of sense either. And he started reading the Bible. He started talking with a patient pastor who answered a number of his arguments, was very patient even when he spoke what he sometimes considered blasphemous questions, and referred to C.S. Lewis, another good reading. In a two-year process, he turned around and the Lord convinced him to follow him. And he said that he discovered that Christianity provided the only real answers to the big questions of life, like why are we here and what happens after we die. So this caliber of person we present, no one can laugh off by saying, well, he believes because he's too ignorant to know better. So God uses what we call credibility clout to pull the weeds out, to unencumber the soil so God's truth can sprout. Cognitive dissonance shows up in a couple of other things too. There's a book that Norman Geisler and Frank Turek published called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. This really shocked some of our listeners. Well, now, wait a minute. Isn't faith something that religious people have? And isn't certainty what atheists have? But the dictionary definition and the biblical definition are pretty close. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the certainty of what we do not see. And scientists, or at least some of the atheistic ones, that try to account for the fine-tuning of the one universe we do know about, come up with the idea that there are other universes, as many as 10 to the 500th, is one figure I've seen, that tried to come into existence, failed to meet some of the criteria, and the one that we know about is the only one that that we see. Let's believe in the unseen other ones to account for why that, how that could have happened without God. So it's been a head-on collision with what I always knew in the minds of a number of the listeners. One Russian listener put it this way, it was like an explosion in my mind. We tend to say in our American idiom, it blew my mind, but it's the same concept. So as we mentioned, the thoughts that drove Alan Sandage, who made the laws? Another question that is quite often convincing to people is, why did science develop in Christian countries? Was it just the fact that we assumed that if there was a wise creator behind it, there would be logical laws that we could discover, and that's how we discovered the scientific laws and created the science that we know today? One NASA spokesman made the statement, maybe we're all Martians, because he realized that there is not fossil evidence of non-living substances and organic materials becoming the first cell, as far as any archaeology we know on Earth. And therefore, his interpretation is that maybe it occurred on Earth and was eroded away, or the possibility is that some of this occurred on Mars, and something like an amino acid or some precursor to the first cell landed on Earth and evolved from here. So this is one of the things we discussed also. I think we should begin question time. I won't cover all the things I was going to, but if you have questions, let me know. Otherwise, I'll continue with additional things. Yes?
I'll make one comment about the virgin birth.
Yes.
I saw a parish article some years ago called Parthenogenesis and Komodo Dragons. It was written about the experience of some British zoo. The female Komodo dragons, you may have at the British zoo, but you have males visiting. They aren't resident in those areas. They'll visit and fertilize the female. I guess the male Komodo dragons are a handful, says, and you only have two of them. The interesting thing is, some of those females had young without any males to fertilize. Now, they're reptiles. They aren't us. But frankly, if a girl was a virgin and is fertilized by some non-human factor, would anybody believe her? They didn't believe Mary. So therefore, I think we need to recognize that these atheists may not have the full answer either.
Okay.
If you need to advance as a reptile, as opposed to a sponge, can you do parthenogenesis? Maybe it's a singularity.
Okay. Well, this is one of the things we covered in a script called Science and Miracles. The fact that there are a number of things you and I do today that a person a century ago would consider magic. And if we can reverently speak of it this way, if God is a species superior to humans, he would be able to do things that we are not. Another way to look at it is an airplane is heavier than air even when it's empty. Now you put tons of luggage and fuel and passengers on board, it's going to go nowhere if the only law that pertains is the law of gravity. But some engineers have figured out that there are laws of aerodynamics that if you shape the wings a certain way, if you accelerate to a certain speed and various other factors, gravity isn't going to hold you down. And so could there be, if there is an intelligence superior to the human race, could there be someone who knows how to do things that we find humanly impossible? So that's a thought related to what you were mentioning there. Yes?
Smart. Now we know this is impossible. But But it seems to me that they never would have been written down if the people back then didn't know they were impossible also.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That would not have been news worth writing down if it had not been out of the ordinary, if it had not been an exception. Okay, good point. Yes?
We still see miracles in kind of third world countries and borders.
Okay.
And people being risen from the dead.
What, people coming back from the dead, you say? Okay. Okay.
You know, they believe so simply.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's true. Good. Okay, now as far as the theme of beyond books, when we go into some of these things, such as electronic distribution and broadcasts and so on, one of the things we try to do is use less formal vocabulary. The vocabulary that is used in the journal, for example, is over the heads of a lot of our listeners. Shorter, simpler sentences, conversational style, and including pictorials, sound clips, and various other things. The on-demand media, people can look for a few seconds and they're off onto something that grabs their attention more. So catch their attention right up front. Now, as far as good seed taking root, from Moscow, your program makes sense to intelligent people who live in the 21st century. Siberia, when I was a student, I was a confirmed atheist, but thanks to your programs, I'm thinking differently already. And one of my favorite ones is this one, "If it weren't for your program, I would be with the Hare Krishnas now." Another one said that, let's see if I can get to it. When he first heard our program, well, he was a 23-year-old who had had the full dose of atheistic indoctrination from kindergarten, preschool, through university. So when he first heard our program, we made sense for a few minutes. But then we mentioned that ridiculous word, God, and he snapped it off in disgust. Nobody could be that stupid. But he did come back and listen in subsequent weeks, which was a miracle by itself, probably. And eventually he wrote, "I found myself changing from a complete skeptic to a half-skeptic, half-believer. Now I'm a complete believer. You've rescued a dead soul." And so the Lord took the particular weed killers that we were applying and used them over a period of a few months to change the attitude that he had developed over those years. One listener burned 117 episodes onto CD so they can listen again and discuss them with friends. This is the half and half I was talking about. You've rescued a dead soul. Any other questions? Okay, there are some additional thoughts we can share then. Do we sometimes try to build a house starting with the third floor? When I was a child, it was probably fairly appropriate to walk up to a stranger and quote John 3:16 or hand him four spiritual laws or something like that. But Homer and Jethro did a satire one time of Hernando's Hideaway. "I know a dark and gloomy spot upstairs over a vacant lot." How can you build something upstairs over a vacant lot? No foundation. But the way I see it, the first floor has to be a knowledge that God exists. He who comes to God must believe that he is. The second floor, he has to believe that the Bible is God's authentic message before he's ready to have scripture quoted to him or a pamphlet or Gospel of John or something handed to him. Okay, 2 more minutes? Okay, 2 minutes to close totally or to go to questions? Okay, so the DNA of pulling weeds, dislodging negative attitudes, deflating nonsensical arguments, showing that they really are the arguments of a schoolboy, not of someone who's thinking logically, and data nudging atheists to rethink their positions. So can we find, are there among us, for example, some Christian counterparts of Carl Sagan? someone who is media savvy, comfortable with talking to late night comedians, as Sagan did with Johnny Carson. The go-to guys who are always ready there to interpret new developments from a biblical viewpoint, like the Higgs boson God particle that's gotten publicized the last several weeks. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. Being firmly convinced that Genesis 1:1 is true gives the foundation for John 3:16 and the rest of Scripture. So as far as Transworld Radio is concerned, my program is on in less than 10 languages out of the 200-plus languages that TWR carries. They have 13 primary stations, including AM, FM, shortwave, and satellite. And one of the things that I really admire them is they take very seriously the idea of reaching every possible person. For instance, the AM stations, the ceiling here in the United States is 50,000 watts. But the Lord has opened up doors for us of 100,000, 400,000, 600,000 on Sri Lanka, and a million watts from Monte Carlo, so that they really do take seriously their outreach. And the reason we've changed the name from Transworld Radio, shortening to TWR, is because we're expanding way beyond radio into on-demand reaches on the websites and so on. So that's the idea of pulling weeds before planting seeds. Thanks.